The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
I don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
My wife accused me of not being passionate enough. I couldn't believe it. I had to send her an email. Oh, man. Good to have you with me. This is Dr. Ray Graney, program Doctor Is In, variant of the program, E-Person Monday, not email. Nope. Linguistically sensitive. Linguistic engineering precedes social engineering. You know that. You got to control the language. Once you control the language, you control an awful lot of people's thinking because they don't think about thinking. So therefore, they just swallow the words whole and the words convey the idea, and therefore you got it. Good to have you with me here. What do I got to make an announcement on? A couple of things. Well, I did develop a test. When I was in college, I called it the real man test. And back in those days, you were allowed to do that kind of stuff. You can't do that now, but you could then. It's a real man test, and the test basically was scored in such a way that if you answered C to what the question was, it gives you three answers, and you had to choose one. If you answered C, that essentially raised your real man score. I'll give you an example. As you grow older, what lost quality of your youth do you miss the most? A, innocence. B, idealism. C, cherry bombs. Okay. About this one. You've been seeing a woman for several years. She's attractive, intelligent. You always enjoy being with her. Leisurely afternoon, you're watching a football game. Suddenly, out of the clear blue sky, she tells you she really loves you. But she can't bear the uncertainty of not knowing where this relationship is going. She said she's not asking whether you want to get married right away, but just whether you believe there's some kind of future. What do you say? A, you sincerely believe the two of you do have a future, but you want to take it slowly. B, although you have strong feelings for her, you can't honestly say you're ready any time to make a lasting commitment. You don't want to hurt her by holding out false hope. C, you can't believe the Broncos called a draw play on 3rd and 17. See, real man test. All right. Where am I at with this? What do I want to talk about? A parent will say to me they're frustrated with their children. Very frustrated. I want to get to the source of the frustration. Many sources. Here's a common one. They expect children not to be children. They expect that this child is going to quit doing this at some point. They expect this child to act better. Now, I'm not saying that's a goal you reach for. A great definition of frustration. Frustration is the difference between the way we want things to be and the way they are. Now, that definition applies well to human relations. Frustration is the difference between the way we want somebody else to be and the way they are. If I want my child to be more naturally mannerly, more cooperative, more pleasant, more obedient, that's what I want. That's my ultimate goal as a parent, to teach him these things. But if I expect, now there's two ways to define expect. I'll get to the other way in a second. But if I expect, meaning he should act this way, I'm going to get frustrated. I'm going to get frustrated. He's a kid. They do these kinds of things, and they do them repetitively. Now, if you use expect in the other sense, which is a goal, a standard, my expectation is that you use manners. Okay, I'm going to do my best to teach you to use manners. But if I expect you to always use manners, I'm going to be frustrated. Because you're not going to always use manners. You're a kid. A lot of frustration comes from expecting not only kids but adults to act a certain way. If I've got a relative that is snidely and snarky and snippy and snooty, and they've been this way as long as I've known them, am I still frustrating myself over their conduct? What do I expect? Snark number 27 just got uttered. Am I shocked? Why would I be shocked? This is nothing new. This is predictable. This is who they are in many contexts. Doesn't mean they're a bad person, but they do this. And they probably will continue to do this. So why am I so frustrated with them? Because I expect them not to be that way. But they are that way. Your expectation is not in line with reality. The reality is that's how they act. That's what they say. Your expectation is, I don't want them to act that way. I don't want them to say those things. Well, I understand that. I'm not saying you have to like it. I'm simply saying because you expect it, you're going to get frustrated because you can't control what they're going to do. We get frustrated when we expect people to act differently than they are. How often somebody is still getting very frustrated with a family member who's been this way for 28 years. How long does it take us to come to the conclusion that this is what they're capable of? Doesn't mean you shun them. Doesn't mean you judge them. It doesn't mean you just give them your ill will in return. No, it just means, why is it shocking you like it did 10 years ago or 15 years ago or even 3 years ago? This is their pattern. It's their style. So to expect anything different is to get frustrated every time they act the same. Well, it bothers me. It bothers me the more they do it. Actually, it should bother you the less they do it, because it loses credibility. If you have someone in your life that is normally very pleasant, easy to get along with, kind-hearted, and they make some kind of remark that shocks you, never expected them to say that. That would hit you pretty hard, wouldn't it? It's out of character. But if you know someone who does this a lot, they're really opinionated about religion and about politics and about child rearing and about it, just about anything. Their way is the only way to do it. Their way is the right way, and you're out of touch or you're a big dummy. So why is this bothering you more? It should be bothering you less because it's repetition. One of the hallmarks of physiological addiction is habituation. In other words, the drug has less and less effect. You can draw a parallel to unpleasant kinds of behavior. The words have less and less effect because you've digested them repeatedly over the last 16 years. Why do they still have power and credibility? What do you expect? That's the question you have to ask yourself. And if you say, well, my frustration is the difference between what I expect and what is. Okay. Well, it's easier to move your expectations than it is to move reality. You have a lot of control over your expectations. You may not have much control over reality, and you certainly don't have control over another person in the end. All righty. Dr. A, program, doctor is in. We shall jump onto the stack of e-persons as soon as I get back.
Doctor?
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 Doctor.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
The Encounter Conference, December 28th through the 30th at the DeVos Place Convention Center in Grand Rapids, Michigan. 13 powerful speakers. Do you want more?
The truth is, brothers and sisters, there is no solution to the cultural and church crisis but Jesus Christ the Lord, alive in a church that's empowered by the Holy Spirit. Period. That's it. He's finding out right now who's with me, who wants to live in the Spirit of God, who wants to follow me. That's what he's doing. It's going to be a work of God for the glory of the Father. The Father glorifying the Son in the power of the Holy Spirit through a people who are alive to Him and are proclaiming Him with everything they've got.
Register today at EncounterConference.org. That's EncounterConference.org.
Hi, this is Colleen Kelly Mast of Mast Appeal. It's tough raising faithful Catholic kids in today's world. How do you teach your kids to cherish their faith and carry it into adulthood? Find out in a new free webinar hosted by Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchek called Raising Confident Catholic Kids. It's happening on Monday, November 14th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Sign up today at catholichom.com/webinar. Remember, it's free. That's catholichom.com/webinar.
When you see the world with Catholic eyes, you see God's hand at work in human history. You see the true, the good, and the beautiful. With a Master's of Arts in Catholic Studies from Franciscan University of Steubenville, you see the world as it truly is. This online program helps you see art, literature, theology, psychology, and more as occasions for grace. Find out more about the Master's in Catholic Studies at franciscan.edu/MCS. That's franciscan.edu/MCS.
Good to have you with me, Dr. Ray Grandy. Program Doctor is in. Good to have you. Let's go straight to the e-person. I have a widowed mother-in-law. Okay, this is obviously coming from the husband who tells my wife when she is coming to visit. She lives 5 hours away. She wants to visit us every other month for birthdays, baptisms, holidays. Wants to stay for 5 or more days. Sometimes she wants to come every month. We have 5 children, ages 10 and under. When my mother-in-law comes, she asks when breakfast, lunch, and dinner is. Okay. When my wife asks her to help, it causes more problems. Now, I'm reading between the lines here. Widowed mother of the wife coming in. She's lonely, probably. wants to come, wants to stay, part of the household. But apparently, if it causes more problems, mother-in-law is not doing a whole lot to help out and cooperate. My wife is constantly trying to think of reasons to shorten the trip or to reschedule, but receives a heavy guilt trip. Well, I would imagine that part of that would be that I've lost your father. I don't know how recently that is. But it's pretty obvious now that wife is trying to get her mother not to come as often or stay as long. That's got to be obvious. She probably says things like, well, you know, I mean, if you're going to come Tuesday, we've got Wednesday night, we've got CCD, and Thursday night, we got one of the kids with a game, and it's going to be tough to juggle the schedule. And the mother probably says something like, oh, that's okay. I'll just kind of be there. I won't interfere with anything. That's what happens. That's what happens. You know that. My wife agrees. Well, who does she agree with? I mean, obviously she agrees with husband. Certainly doesn't agree with her mother because her mother doesn't agree. My wife agrees that the visits are too long and too often. She has tried to set a boundary by telling her that the stay needs to be shorter. The stays need to be shorter and less frequent. Interestingly enough, she's tried to set a boundary. In other words, she said, it's hard, Mom, to juggle all the schedules. It is hard to pay attention to the kids and do all that I have to do because it sounds like that her mother is not just part of the background or helpful. It sounds like she's there and has her own requirements and conditions and expectations. To use that word. The guilt and the persistence is on the heavy side. In other words, the daughter, with five children under 10, has tried to tell her mother, it's tough, Mom, it's just tough juggling all these schedules, raising all these kids, doing everything I have to do. Maybe, Mom, even homeschools, I don't know. But the mother has certain demands. When is breakfast, lunch, and dinner? I mean, if you're going to keep a low profile, you don't even ask that. You just wait until it's set. Or, ideally, you help out, or you cook it, or you clean it up. But apparently that's not happening. Not happening. If it were, I don't think it would be such a stress on the daughter. Do you have any tips on how to set a healthy boundary? Well, sure. Sure, I have great tips. All you do is you tell Mom, it's too much. We can't do it. We can't juggle it. We can't juggle it. Now, that's what you do. But that's not your question. Your question is, how do we set a boundary and make my mother-in-law understand? See, that's very different. Your wife has already attempted to set boundaries. She's already attempted to say, these are the demands on our family time. And she probably hasn't said, Mom, you're not real helpful when you're here. Mom, you're kind of demanding when you're here. She's probably not said that. And she didn't want to offend her mother. Okay, I got that part. So what she's done is she's tried to put it all on our family structure, our family demands, our family conditions. And hoping her mother will understand, and it doesn't sound like she does. Or if, in fact, the daughter has said this to her mother, probably many times, the mother's ignored it because she hadn't said to herself, well, maybe if I'm more helpful, maybe if I keep a lower profile when they're busy with these five children, I won't be such a demand on them. I don't think Mom's done that. So here's my suggestion. My suggestion is that for the most part, daughter runs her family as she would if mother is not there. Oh, that doesn't mean she doesn't talk to Mom. Doesn't mean she doesn't have pleasant interaction. It means breakfast comes when breakfast comes. If there are activities in the evening, they go to those activities. They're going to run their household as they would normally run their household. And mother is going to have to either go with the flow or feel dissed, if you want to use that neologism. And she'll probably leave early. Now, how to stop the guilt? You don't. Because up to this point, the guilt has worked. So daughter is obviously sensitive to her mom making her feel like you're shortchanging me. You're not doing what I need you to do when I come here for my visits. And so the daughter feels terrible and she tries to juggle both. So she reaches towards her mom, but she feels torn because she feels like she's shortchanging her family life. I think the only way around that is for her to continue to do as she would do with her family of five children under 10 and her husband, and to recognize that mom is going to try to do this to make her feel bad. Now, this was not said in the letter. My suspicion and my guess is that this isn't a new style on mom's part. If I got a chance to talk to the daughter and ask about what mom's been like over the years that she's known her as a mom, that this kind of demanding style is nothing unexpected. It's what she does. And it may have gotten worse now that she is a widow because her husband is not there, and whatever time they shared together, now she doesn't have that, so she's filling it in with her daughter and her daughter's family. I understand that. You don't have to be mean. You don't have to be cruel. You don't have to be harsh. You just simply go about your business and say, hey, mom, I got to take the kids to here. You want to go or not? Hey, mom, tonight, no supper tonight. We're going to have to pick up something because the way things are scheduled right now, we're going to get the little one to bed by 7 and the two older ones, I got to work on their homework. If you want to help them, you can. But I probably wouldn't say, mom, will you help him with his homework? Because it sounds like she doesn't really do much of that kind of helpfulness. You're not being mean. You're not being cruel. You are setting a boundary by living it. See, your assumption is if I tell her, she'll accept that. Well, that's one thing nice about quote-unquote setting boundaries. Much of the time, you ever see those little paper mache hoops that they have as the football players run through them in high school and homecoming? They blast through them like they're air. Well, in a lot of respects, that's what people do to boundaries. And the thinking is, well, there must be some way to explain my boundary so that the person accepts it willingly and pleasantly. They may accept it, but that doesn't mean they're going to like it. And in a worst case scenario, they could resent it. My suspicion is if daughter continues to live her family life when her mother is there, incorporating her mother where she can, mother is going to feel neglected. She's going to feel like she's not getting her due. And I think that's personally better than coming up with excuses all the time, because you're going to have to keep doing that for a long time. And those are pretty transparent. You can see through them. All right. I'm Dr. Ray.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
On this show and on this network and in many of our other outlets that we have through Ave Maria Radio and EWTN, we're always going to keep you up to date on what's happening in terms of the culture and how toxic the culture is. Certainly, we talk about that every week so you can navigate the media landscape, so you can learn about the challenges and be well aware of them. That's one thing. We talk about religious liberty issues. We talk about the attacks, of course, on the pro-life causes. We need to be aware of all that, which is why we talk about it. So we give you the tools, we give you the information, the research that we come up with as writers, as producers, as presenters, as talk show hosts, on and on and on. But at the end of the day, what do we need to do when we know this? We should be speaking out even more loudly and on a regular basis.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Did you know you have divine glory living within you? If you are a baptized Christian, you are host to a gentle guest, says the Catholic Catechism. This guest inspires, guides, corrects, and strengthens us to live our life in Christ. That gentle friend is the Spirit of Christ, the third person of the Blessed Trinity, the Holy Spirit. He is active in us, transforming us spiritually if we are willing, so that we may live as children of the light. There are two ways to live. The first way, the way of Christ, leads to life. The opposite way leads to death, an eternity without God. Choose life, then. Choose Christ, a life of challenge and joy. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Doesn't this sound like one of those theme musics from those private investigators? They always had great names, you know, Rockford Files. What was the name of the guy? Hawaii 5-0, Bookum Dano. What was the one with Tom Selleck? Magnum PI. But those are manly names. Manly. You don't hear a name like, "Hi, Joe Lilac, private investigator." It just doesn't happen. One last question's on my real man test that I developed when I was in grad school, and of course I got an F because I just didn't think my prof liked that. And I also think in this last question, my prof didn't even know who I was alluding to. The question is, what, in your opinion, is the most reasonable explanation for the fact that Moses led the Israelites in the desert for 40 years before they finally entered the Promised Land? A, he was being tested. B, he wanted them to really appreciate the Promised Land when they finally got there. Or C, the real man answer, he refused to ask for directions. Dr. Ray, I have a somewhat unique situation with my 12-year-old son of video games. Well, Mom, I don't think it's so unique as you describe it. I know why you think it's unique, but I don't think it's real unique. We only allow video game play for an hour on Saturday and one on Sunday. So 2 hours total during the week. No video games on weekdays or school days. When we ask him to turn it off, he always does so quickly and obediently. All right, so it's not a source of arguments then and there. All the games he plays are harmless. In other words, nothing like certain video games. I don't know what Fortnite is, but she mentions Fortnite. However, after we turn the video games off, well, I'm assuming he does, he will sit and think about them, want to talk about them, and overall obsesses. Now, this is why I think Mom thinks that she's got a unique situation. With only 2 hours a week, he shouldn't be doing this. I think that's mom's thought. He seems to have an air of malaise and very little interest in anything else. Reading, sports. We make him play. He's a decent athlete. We've even noticed that when he's with his peers, he just wants to talk about video games and nothing else. It seems that this is the only thing that he gets excited about and that he's able to talk about. The thing that puzzles us is that he has many friends who spend far more time playing video games, but they don't seem to have this level of obsession. Now, I think this is where mom thinks she has a unique situation. Yeah, 2 hours a day, and he is just totally mentally wrapped up in these things. Now, here comes a contextual situation. He struggled in school this past year. All right, here's my question. Has he always struggled in school? Or is this a function of, he's probably in the sixth grade, he's 12 years old, maybe the seventh. Struggled in school this past year, and we've been spending a lot of time with him regarding schoolwork, summer tutoring, extra schoolwork. Question, has he shown these kinds of struggles, these kinds of learning problems all along, or is this relatively new? He's begun complaining more this past year and has had a general decline in his attitude toward school, sports, and chores. He'll do what we ask, but often begrudgingly. I'm hesitant. Okay, now we're getting down to the nub. I'm hesitant to take away video games as he is doing this extra work, and this is the one thing he enjoys. But his obsession with the games and his attitude toward them are really starting to worry us. Should we just pull the plug, get rid of the games? Should we make him work for it more? I'm in a conundrum because he's not one of these kids who plays every day and is difficult to pull away from video games. Well, here's the matter, I think. For whatever the reason, your son, unique to him, is affected more heavily by the games. He just, whatever it is about those games, whatever it is about his wiring, they mean the world to him. And if you say, well, it's something that means the world to him, if you take it away, all we'll do is we'll just dig a deeper hole. What you said that's making me more nervous, I think, than anything, is that he's declining in his interest in other things. I probably would sit down with him and say, son, I don't like what I'm seeing. All that matters to you, it seems, is playing video games. And you live for the weekend when you get your hour. What is happening here is that your schoolwork is declining. You're not interested in anything else. That's bothering me a lot. So here's what I want to do. I want you to show me that those games are not going to affect you this way. I want to see you bringing up your schoolwork. So you don't have to do extra schoolwork. Now, again, mom, this is assuming there's no learning problems, that we don't necessarily need a tutor anymore, because this could reflect just a lack of interest in school, because compared to a video game, a school is boring as all get out. You know this. And everything else is becoming boring in his life. So what I would want to see from him is an increase in his socializing, especially with his family members, in his perhaps reading, other activities, more enthusiasm for playing his sport. And then I can tell him, well, I see no problem with these video games because you said they're safe games like sport games or whatever they are. if they aren't affecting you this way. If they're affecting you this way, then I'm going to eliminate them until you show me that you can handle them and keep them in the proper balance. Now, that's what I would do. I'd say, you show me first that these things aren't becoming so important to you that they are overshadowing every other thing. Why him? Why 2 hours doing this to him? Who knows? All we know is it does. I'm Dr. Ray.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. If you're on a football team, you don't want to just run up and down the field holding the ball and never cross into the end zone and get a touchdown. We want to reach our goal, but there are a lot of obstacles, discouragement, and challenges along the way. Jesus' voice is the one calling us to say yes to him, to live the life that he is calling us to live. We have to choose one way or the other, choose him or not. But if we choose him, we will be opposed. We're going to have people challenge what we believe or call us crazy. But Jesus doesn't just say, come follow me, to follow a beatitude. He's calling us to be like himself. He is the Beatitudes. He doesn't just say, do what I say. He says, come follow me. He's with us every step of the way, transforming our weakness into strength. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Today, many U.S. citizens chafe under big government and have actually turned anti-government. St. Paul, however, teaches that in some way, the civic authorities are ministers of God. Even King Jesus didn't consider it unjust to give taxes to Caesar. But we must never let Caesar or the king, the prime minister, stand in the place of God and control our conscience. When ancient Israel demanded that Samuel give them a human king, Samuel warned them that he's going to bring heavy taxes, he's going to bring a military draft, he's going to favor the rich. And when Jesus, the true king, actually arrives, he dies for his people, because that's what a true king is willing to do. King Jesus, still on the throne, no matter what presidents, dictators, or earthly rulers do. And we have to remember, we get our marching orders from him.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
To kind of spiff up my social life, and I don't know how to do that. I saw a meme that it was in a funeral parlor, and the funeral director was there, and there were two people sitting in the funeral parlor, and that was it. The rest of the chairs were all empty. There was hundreds of them. They were empty. Funeral director said, I don't understand this. He had 2,000 Facebook friends. So I'm trying to use friends with Facebook principles. Every day, walk down the street, I tell people that I don't know what I've eaten, how I'm feeling right then, what I did the night before, what I'm going to do later, who I'm going to spend time with. I hand them pictures of my family, my dog, me cleaning the car, taking things apart in the garage, watering the lawn, driving around town, standing in front of everything, eating. I listen in on their conversations when they're talking. I give them a thumbs up. I tell them I like them. And it is working. It is working. Just like Facebook. I already have 4 followers. 2 police officers, a private investigator, and a psychiatrist. So it's working. Okay, this is E-Person Monday on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarini, and I thank you always, always for your kind company. Well, I don't know if it's kind, but it's company. Dr. Ray, I have 6 children, 5 boys, 1 girl. Triplets are there by an act of God. All the boys are out of the house, and the triplets are 28. All working. None are asking me for money. I'm very proud. Our daughter, now 22, was homeschooled. She's a junior in college with a 4.0. She is our pride and joy. She's the only girl. All right, so she stands out, and this is written by a dad. We were at dinner 3 weeks ago, and she stated she was thinking about becoming a nun. My first reaction was that she needs to finish school first. Told her that. I am a disabled veteran, and all the children go to university. Well, given that this gentleman was saying university, it's sounding like this is in Canada, at no charge. I want her to finish school and then come back to her decision. That seemed to end the subject. It's 3 weeks later, and I'm feeling guilty. I don't think I was discouraging, but maybe not encouraging. I feel if one of my 5 sons stated that they wanted to be a priest, I think I would have said, let's go. When my daughter said it, I was in a panic. I'll be honest. I don't want her to be a nun. I'm sick about it. Because I don't know if that's a sin. Dad, I don't think that's the only reason you're sick about it. And I'll get to that in a second. I'm very attached to my daughter. I think that's the big one. All right, she's your one girl. For whatever the reason, and you go on to explain this, I retired from military and basically raised her while her mother was at work. I schooled her. I taught her. She has no social media, no inappropriate behavior. A model daughter. She even wears her veil in church. I'm torn up about this, but still afraid to put her in the car and take her to convent. Am I wrong? Dad, it's understandable that you have a great attachment to your daughter, and she probably has a great attachment to you. In many respects, you are very, very tight in her growing up. I think you're viewing this, her becoming a nun, depending upon how that will remove her from your close family circle socially, as you said it, she's my pride and joy, and I'm not going to see her anymore, or I'm going to see her very little, or if she comes cloistered, I won't see her hardly at all. That's it. She'll be gone. And that's what you're thinking. Are you wrong? Well, there are those people who have minimal or no faith who would not feel at all wrong in saying this. They would say, I don't want you to do this. It's not unusual. There are a lot of parents who don't want their sons to become priests either. However, if your faith matters to you, and it sounds like it does, then whether you are thinking, I don't want to lose the quote-unquote future with my daughter and her marriage and her children and my grandchildren and all these things that you are future projecting. That's why you're terrified. That's why you're in a panic. And I think you said finish school first because you're hoping that she passes through this stage. I would suggest you sit back down with her. The first question you ask her, did I throw a bucket of cold water on what you felt you were being called to? Now, if she says, well, I don't know if I'm being called to that yet. Okay. Then I want you to know that if that's what you're being called to, if you feel God is putting that in your heart and soul, that I am with you every step of the way. Now, I know, Dad, you're not thinking that. You're thinking, no, I'm not. But you will be with her every step of the way because if this is what she wishes, if this is what God has called her. And you don't know that, and you don't know how it'll unfold, and you don't know if 2 years into all of this she'll say, this is not where I belong. But in the meantime, revisit it. Find out how strong this calling is for her. Find out where it came from. And find out if she's feeling torn because she knows that you've got this very strong attachment to your one and only daughter that you shared a lot of growing up with. And so she is feeling guilty because this is what right now she's entertaining, contemplating, and she knows that dad, quote unquote, would be crushed. And you want to take that away. You want to say, no, I will not be crushed. I will go with what you ultimately choose. Even if you have to make yourself say that. Because you, in my opinion, you can only lose. If this is what she really wants to do, and she feels very called to this, and you essentially pull the plug on it, where do you think she's going to be about this 2 years from now? So I think you're best to say, let's follow this out and see where it goes. And I'll hold your hand because I'm your daddy. And I've raised a wonderful girl. And she's saying, I want to serve the Lord this way. I'm Dr. Ray.
What did I just say?
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere. And that's a doctor's order.
Abortion.
Pornography.
Embryonic stem cell research.
Corporate contributions to Planned Parenthood. Do you invest in companies that are engaged in these practices? The Ave Maria Mutual Funds do not, and their investment portfolios reflect that. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta, host of Cresta in the Afternoon. You know, our kids are getting different values from school, from friends, and from the media than what we're teaching them at home. How do you create a family life that will help your children treasure their faith forever? You know, most kids lose their faith about the time they leave home. There's a way of fighting against that, though, and passing on to our children your deep passion for the Lord and for His church. Greg and Lisa Popchick are hosting a webinar, a free webinar, on Monday, November 14th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. They're going to be offering practical research-based tips to help ensure that your kids always cherish their faith, even when they leave the home. Now, you can sign up for free at CatholicHome, that's HOM.com/webinar. Again, this is free at CatholicHome.com/webinar.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you have an insurance plan that pays for everything, even things you don't believe in? There are options. You can join Solidarity HealthShare, a faith-based health-sharing community. Plus, Solidarity HealthShare can save you money with prices starting as low as $384 a month for families.
Call to see how much you can save. 844-398-9399. That's 844-398-9399.
Thank you for joining me here. Doctor is in. Dr. Ray Guarendi. Website, drray.com, D-R-R-A-Y.com. All the books are there, including the most recent one, Taught by 10, What I've Learned from Raising My 10 Children, What I Was Forced to Learn, What Was Pushed Upon Me, What I Was Dragged Kicking and Screaming to Learning. So it was the most recent one. Some of the things I've learned. Maybe I'll talk about them in a future monologue. What else do I got here? Anything specifically? Oh, yeah. Psychology instructor. Had just finished a lecture on mental health and was giving a test, oral test. Speaking specifically about bipolar disorder, she asked, how would you diagnose a patient who walks back and forth, screaming at the top of his lungs 1 minute, then sits in a chair, weeping uncontrollably the next? Young man in the rear raised his hand and answered, a basketball coach? where are we this? Okay, this is a kind of an e-person comment. This regarding rosary and the loss of concentration during the rosary. Thank you for your talk about this. It was a most uplifting reminder to me that I am not losing interest in the Lord after these many years. That this is something we all experience. I gave the talk that so often when I pray the rosary, I have to keep bringing myself back. And lots of times I'll say 13, 14, or 15 Hail Marys per decade because I just thought, you know, my mind wandering all over the place. Who knows? I don't even remember the last four Hail Marys that I said. Happens a lot. And I talked about how easily it is to get distracted during prayer. I'll be sitting in Mass, look behind the priest, and I'll see a little crack on the wall there. And I'll think, boy, you could spackle that and probably paint over it. But I bet the paint wouldn't match. You know, that's the thing. You probably would have to paint the whole thing. That's what happened with me in the garage. I had to paint the whole thing because I couldn't get the paint to match it, and then I had to paint the whole thing. Maybe I should repaint it. It is getting kind of dingy looking. I'll do it this Saturday. No, I can't do it this Saturday. I got tickets to the game. I'm going to head up to the game. Maybe that's it, because they're in a pennant run. This is good. They haven't been in it. I went from a crack in the wall behind the priest in approximately 32 seconds to the Indians being in a pennant run. When we had the 10 children, people say, why'd you adopt 10? I said, well, it's a decade of the rosary. You know, we could all just kind of pray our 10 Hail Marys. There was one of our children who was always at the wrong place, and he was reminded by the other children. He was told, because he'd pray Hail Mary, and one of the children would say, glory be, Dad. Oh, yeah, I knew that. I was just seeing if you were paying attention. Dad was the one who was most often distracted during the rosary. Yeah, probably even more so than a three-year-old. Many people don't pray sometimes because they feel they're being rude to God, or they feel they're being somehow neglectful or lazy or sloppy. So rather than feeling bad about that happening, then they just avoid it. But believe it or not, there are people who do that. I mean, I'm tempted to do that. I feel like, well, you know, if I can't do this the right way, yeah, maybe I should not do it. G.K. Chesterton said, if something, and I'll paraphrase him, he said doing, but I'll say praying. If something is worth praying, it's worth praying poorly. That's right. So what I do is I bring myself back, and the next Hail Mary in the rosary decade, I'm pretty much with it. I'm right there until the one following it. And then Holy Mary, Mother of God, start to slip away again. So my rosaries are basically a process of pulling my attention back to my prayers and drifting away. That is sadly humanity. That is sadly more of us than others. My mind wanders all over the place. Excuse me, how could I do this program if my mind didn't wander? I mean, I've got to be thinking quickly in various directions, right? So on one hand, that is something helpful to me doing this program. It's not helpful for me to pray because my mind skitters all over the place. And perhaps maybe the best way I can show the Lord I want to pay attention to him is to keep bringing myself back. And that's what I would say to you. Keep bringing yourself back.
Sometimes I have to close my eyes during Mass because if I don't, I get distracted. Real easy with the crack in the wall behind the priest. Or looking at somebody that, hey, I think I know her. I know him. Where do I know them from? Did I see him in the store last week? I play softball with that guy. No. That might be his brother. Well, they look a lot alike. And I'm off to the races. So, show God you want to pray. And you'll keep bringing yourself back to attention. I think that's a real gift to give God if you can do that. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In on E-Person Monday. I appreciate so much your company, as always. Thank you, Andrew Krucek, producer man, all the folks out there. Walk with God and pay attention to where you're walking.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.